a shot, runs into the box, shot,
score! It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Welcome to our weekly show. We talk soccer in Atlanta. We talk soccer in Georgia. We talk soccer all over the Southeast. We talk soccer all over the United States. We get into different hemispheres, different continents. It's what we do on AST each and every week. It's been a weird week for Atlanta United. Two matches in the League's Cup, both losses. Both, when you take the result out of it, there's a lot of positives in them, and there's also a lot of frustration in them. It's been a really strange season all the way around, and I think the League's Cup has kind of been the entire 2025 season wrapped up into two games, so I'm a little afraid about what happens tomorrow night against Atlas in a match that neither team can advance, so both teams are going to be playing it with an eye on getting back into league play and what that does for them. So I think you're going to see rotation from both teams. I think you're just going to have to, with the calendars and a game that doesn't mean anything, but the game can mean something for individuals. It can mean something for momentum. It can mean something in that regard. Let's get caught up on what you might have missed in the Atlanta United universe here in this League's Cup run. Wednesday, it was Necaxa, and we talked about it a lot last week. It was a really interesting game. Just taking the Atlanta United hat off for a minute and just talking about the match. Really interesting with everything going on in it. I think Atlanta United played really well for a long portion of the match, a very long portion of the match. I think Necaxa is a work in progress. Fernando Gago, new manager. This was his fourth game with the club. I think you see what he wants to do. I don't know if he has all the players that he needs to do what he wants to do, but very wide open, very high intensity, very aggressive, at times very reckless, unable to keep as much possession as honestly they will need to in the long run. Atlanta had 57% of the ball here. I think the way Necaxa wants to play, you're going to need to be over 50%. To get that done. We saw Agustin Pallavicino, who was outstanding in the match. He's been linked with moves to Club America. He's also been linked with moves potentially to Europe down the line. You look back at the numbers in the match, Atlanta had the better expected goal mark. I'm not the giant subscriber to expected goals, but when you look at a game that finished 3-1 Necaxa and Atlanta United had 1.99 in expected goals to 1.8, Atlanta United had four big chances to one. Shots were 17-16 Atlanta. You walk away from this very frustrated. You have to, because Atlanta United was good enough to win. We go back to the first half. You give up a goal on a break. Shouldn't have been a free kick. I think it was a bad call. Went against Deion Gregerson, but you don't deal with the set piece. It's a crazy sequence where it comes off the bar, off of Brad Kazan, into the goal. That makes it Necaxa 1-0. You answer back pretty quickly. 16 minutes later, Alexi Maranchuk finishes one off. Good work with Luke Brennan. Good work with Latte Lott. Maranchuk finishes it off after it comes off the hands of the goalkeeper. Atlanta United outshot Necaxa 10-4 in the first half. They were the better team. They had two big chances to Necaxa's 0. But it was 1-1, and we've had this conversation a lot this season. Second half was much more even. Necaxa had more shots. Atlanta United had 58% of the ball. Even with only 7 shots to Necaxa's 12, Atlanta had 2 big chances to Necaxa's 1. It's just the mistakes that happen to hurt this team and the goals that get conceded. This time it was Derek Williams with a massive mistake in the 77th minute. that turns the game. Necoxa gets one late in stoppage time to seal it, but you just can't have the mistakes that you're having too often for this team right now. When you look at who is standing out at the moment, I mean, Alexi Maranchuk is part of it. He had six key passes against Necoxa. Outstanding performance from him to go along with the goal. I think Bartosz Szlich has been so, so good for this team over these two games and honestly over the entire summer. But you lose that game to Necoxa. You come back on Saturday, have to go to Orlando and play Pumas in a really weird late kickoff, all kinds of strange things that could be going on in this one. You give up a penalty that, look, it's soft. I mean, you can justify both of the penalties that Pumas got. Yeah, they got two. You can justify both. I think the first one was less soft than the second, but it's still soft. It's one of those plays where Brooks Lennon lunges across and the player looks for the contact rather than plays. He sees the leg out and he runs over it and trips. Can you call that? Absolutely you can. Is it a penalty that you love to see? No, not really, because the player's looking for it. There's not really anything in it. Lennon gets caught leaning, lunging, and it's a goal. Or it's a penalty, and then it's a goal. But then you come back really well again. You get what was originally given as a goal to Saba Lobjanidze and then turned into an own goal off of Keylor Navas, which I think was very harsh. Then Latte Lott with a very well-worked goal. For goal number two, Atlanta led 2-1 at halftime. Now, the issue was the legs ran out for Atlanta, especially with their two starting center backs in A.M. Mihai and Stian Gregersen. Legs ran out about the 60th minute. And neither one were able to finish the game. Neither one were able to really give you what you needed in those moments. You didn't have Derek Williams because he wasn't available due to fatigue as well. So you had to piece together a back line out of paper clips and chewing gum. And it did not hold up. The second penalty was very soft with Ronald Hernandez grabbing the shirt. Ronald was on a yellow. He had to be careful. But he grabbed the shirt of a player about 15 yards outside the 18. He did not drag him down. The player ran through the shirt grab and while it was still being held, then fell down once he got over the line into the 18. Can you justify the call? Yes. Do you like to see the call? No, not really, because it's a player looking for the call rather than playing the game. But you can justify it. The game went to absolute chaos after that. The referee did not manage the match well, did not manage the amount of stoppage time well, did not manage a red card to Keylor Navas well. There was a whole ton of time wasted before that. He didn't manage a substitution well with a whole bunch of time wasted. He didn't manage getting Keylor Navas off the field quickly enough. Keylor Navas was able to help set the wall and get his field player in goal organized. The referee did not manage the wall well enough because it was not 10 yards and it was heavily encroached. And that blocked a shot, which would have had a midfielder trying to save wearing a goalkeeper shirt. You know, when the player's 6 yards from a goal that can, or a free kick that can decide the game, if you're going to give soft penalties late, you have to give that free kick again. There has to be consistency. There wasn't. It was a very poor refereed match. Very poor referee-managed match, maybe to be a little more specific. Ronnie Dyla was sent off after the final whistle. Total shenanigans, ridiculousness. Very frustrating night the way that it ended. But you look at these two games, and more good than bad in the way that the team at Land United played, in the way that the team played. And it's so frustrating that you are in the situation where you're playing better each game. Now, I think you had a little more fatigue in the Pumas game than the Necoxa game, and that hurts you maybe a little bit sooner. But you're playing better game after game after game. 4 games in a row, you've been better than the last game. And you have no wins. And that'll drive you crazy. And now you go into a match here without your manager, who is suspended due to the red card after the final whistle. No Ronnie Dyla, so it's going to be Kenny Miller, the Scottish legend. We had a chance to catch up with Kenny today after training with the media, and here's part of that conversation.
How important is a game like this for somebody like Will Riley, who's going to get that opportunity we would expect?
Listen, Will's been absolutely outstanding for me. And the games that he's played, whether it be from the start and the couple of appearances that he's made or coming on and impacting the game, I thought he's been, even on Wednesday night, I think he'd done everything right. You know, so he's one of those players that we're alluding to that probably deserves some that start. Again, been nothing but impressed by the appearances, the starts that he's been making over there and the strides he's made over the course of the season. So absolutely no doubt that he can step in and do the job, more than capable of doing the job. So yeah, it's an opportunity for him.
It's been a short period of time with Inea, but how have you seen him kind of integrate into the group?
Straight away he's came in and he's been exactly what we wanted. You know, he's stepped in, he's not taken him too long to settle. Obviously in terms of fitness and minutes, it's about getting him up to speed. When you've seen on Wednesday night, he gave everything for the cause and he was just dead at the end of it, you know. So we had to get him off and it left us a little bit like bare at the back. But he's been great, you know, speaking, integrating with the players, contributing in meetings to how we can improve and things we can be better at. So really looking forward to working with him moving forward and really getting him up to speed so we can see the best of him.
What are some of the challenges that Atlas brings to you guys for tomorrow's match?
Listen, they're a good team. Like the first two teams we've played, very, very technical, good players in their team, aggressive in the press. You know, they want to come in hard and they want to win the ball back. Obviously, it's a previous coach as well, so there's always that added edge to a game. So he'll want to come here and show that his team are capable of competing. But it's up to us to face all these challenges. I mean, we know exactly what we're going to be facing. We know it's going to be tough, but again, I know results have not shown it. But we've been playing some really, really good stuff of late. You know, it's been pretty frustrating that we've not managed to get that win because I feel we've been doing everything but that. You know, so it's important that we keep progressing with that. We keep moving the thing forward. Obviously, there's been new signings that have came in over the transfer window as well, and I think they'll help the current group towards the end of the season. So, yeah, big challenge against a good team, but it's one we're really looking forward to.
I'd love to get your perspective on how you've seen the young players handle this season and how they're maybe handling the adversity that the club's dealing with right now.
You know, I think when you're a younger player and you're itching for your opportunity and to get the chance to play in the team, whether it be from the start or coming off the bench, I would like to think they play with a little bit less fear than maybe the more experienced players who have been over the course and distance with it. I mean, again, you talk about Will Riley, you talk about Luke Brenner. I thought Luke's been excellent since he's came in. You know, he's really, I think he's made big strides this season since the boss came in, and he's really kind of taken on that role. Always works super hard for the team. You know, he's a really good team player, but I think he's so close to getting his goal as well. When he comes in and he hits the post the other week there, it was a big moment for him. But again, he's knocking on the door every single day, every single game that he plays, he's getting on that score sheet. But you see, he's contributing to the team. He comes on in Toronto, he wins a penalty. He has an assist in the next game. You know, he's looking a threat. So he's really, really grown and developing. I mean, unfortunately for Jay, he's picked up an injury. He was another one that was looking a real, real player in our team at that moment. And Matt Edwards, you know, he made his debut in the first game of the season. You know, hadn't played, makes his debut, and he actually played so many games. Again, he's one of these guys that, as a younger player, when we were asking a lot of him, you know, he'd be somebody playing maybe different positions and things, and he's just picked up a couple of like niggly injuries. And unfortunately for us, that's been a story of the season with the defenders. Normally, the defence is your platform for success. And unfortunately for us, we've had to make a lot of changes. Full-backs, centre-backs, even in-game, you know, like it's quite rare that you take three your back four off, you know, in any game of football. You don't really see it. I guess I say that's the stability and the platform of the team to get like to go and allow the attacking players to go and win the game. But we've been unlucky with that, and Matt's been another one, but I thought he's been excellent. Playing, like I say, left back, right back, right centre back. He's adapted to every role, and that's only good for him. It can only be helpful in his development as a player, and hopefully it's going to be a long successful career.
That was Kenny Miller, the Atlanta United assistant coach, who will be in charge tomorrow night at the Benz. Atlanta United playing Atlas in Game 3 of the League's Cup. Ronnie Dyla suspended due to the red card received after the final whistle on Saturday. Kenny mentioned new additions during the transfer window. One was announced yesterday, Steven Alzate from English second-tier side Hull City. 26 years old, reportedly a $2 million transfer fee. He's under contract through the 2030 season. 200 career appearances across all competitions. That includes the Premier League, the Championship, the Belgian top flight. Last at Hull City, 22 starts out of 29 appearances in his first season with the club. Previously spent some time on loan at Standard Liège, and that's where he played for Ronnie Dyla during his time there. Came up through Brighton. This is a player who has that Premier League experience, a lot of experience at the Championship level. a guy who I think gives you a central midfielder who maybe isn't a 10, but can give you a little bit more in the attacking half than some of the other midfielders in this group. And you've got quite a few different central midfielders in this group that will be competing for time. We'll talk about some of those midfielders. We'll talk a little bit more about Atlanta United and Atlas in the next segment. But we're also going to get into some of the shenanigans around the world. There are three different storylines that are absurd at the moment. We're going to talk about Sheffield Wednesday. We're going to talk about Botafogo. And we're going to talk about Barcelona. It will be a segment of shenanigans coming up after the break. Come back with us on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. I ran a little bit long in the first segment. I got a little riled up about our referee from Saturday night. Again, Sonny Roberts, our producer, was reminding me of my comments at the full-time whistle. I'll share a funny little story with you afterwards. If you haven't heard Ronnie Dyla's post-game press conference, you can hear it on the full-time report that's posted on Off the Woodwork. I started the questions. I was the Atlanta media there, and I asked Ronnie about just the chaos of the night and the referee. I never do that. This was a game where you kind of had to. And after the press conference, I was outside the room and he came out and I told him, like, I'm sorry, I never ask about referees. I don't ever want to put you in a weird situation like that. But this game, I felt like I kind of had to, and I didn't think about it. And he's like, I never talk about referees in a press conference, and I had to. So it's all good. It was that kind of a night. It was a very strange night in Orlando, but Atlanta United couldn't get it done. The referee didn't help matters, ultimately doesn't decide the match. I mean, the two penalties, questionable, but justifiable. So in my opinion, the referee didn't decide it. I would have liked to have seen that free kick again, though. I would have liked to have seen Bartosz Lisz have another crack at it with a player 10 yards back, not 6 yards back. But I digress. Let's talk to Will Riley. I want you to hear his comments today. I would not be surprised if Will gets the start tomorrow night at the Benz against Atlas in Leagues Cup. Will spoke to the media, and here's the questions that I had for him this afternoon.
When you look at Atlas and the way that they play, you know, what jumps out to you? What do you guys have to do well tomorrow?
Close the middle, defend well. You got a lot of numbers inside. Good technical players, so just moving feet defensively, being sharp, winning balls, and then playing forward quickly and transition quality on the ball.
You never know when opportunities come when you're trying to break in. How big of a game is this for somebody like you who's trying to get more regular minutes with the team?
Big, for sure. Yeah. I'm always, every opportunity is a big opportunity for me. So, like I said, really same approach for any game for me.
What do you think you've learned the most this season?
As an individual player?
As an individual, yeah.
For me, the biggest thing has been, I think I've mentioned this before, but the focus for 90 minutes, like being locked in the whole time you're out there, because you switch off for a second and good players punch you.
How is Kenny different than Ronnie in terms of coaching, since he's going to be in charge tomorrow night?
I think they're similar in a lot of ways. They're both competitors, and they both want to win. That's the most important thing. Kenny is more involved. He's more expressive a lot of the time. So
Kenny runs a lot of the individual activities and training sessions, whereas Ronnie more oversees it. And I think Kenny Miller's had a big impact on Will Riley this season and many of the young players. And you heard it from Kenny Miller in the last segment. The development that you've seen from the Luke Brennans, from the Will Rileys, from the Jay Fortunes, from the Matt Edwards, that's a really important part of the story here. Cooper Sanchez, another one we'll talk about in the 3-4-3, who is now on the first team roster. Would not be surprised if we see him a good bit tomorrow night as well. There's a lot of competition in that midfield now with Alzate and with Riley likely getting a good bit of playing time tomorrow night. These are the types of moments that can change the pecking order a little bit. I think Bartosz Lisz has fully established himself. Will Riley has an opportunity to better establish himself tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to watching that. There will be storylines. Again, this game from a result standpoint doesn't mean anything. I think for many of the individuals, it will absolutely mean something. Let's get into some shenanigans, shall we? This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, and we do talk more things than just Atlanta Soccer in AST. We talk about the game around the world, and I try to bring some different kinds of stories. I mean, we could sit here and talk about Premier League Summer Series and Manchester United won it and what the games were like. They were preseason games. I mean, great event, great time for people to be at the Benz and celebrate the game, and especially for fans of the four clubs that were here. Great time. I try to bring you some different stories here on AST, and three stories I keep coming back to every morning on our Soccer Down Here network. Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, we have the Morning Espresso. And it's basically like your start to the day, the news you need to know. There's a newsletter, there's a podcast. You can consume it whatever way you want. And I feel like lately there have been three different stories that keep coming up and keep adding more layers to them. And they're really unique to the soccer world. I think if you're listening to the show and you're not a hardcore soccer person and you're hearing me ramble on about it and you're like, well, maybe I'm a little interested in some of these things that this crazy guy's talking about. These three stories are so different than we would get in the NFL and Major League Baseball. In the NBA. They're so unique to the soccer world. Let's start with Spain. Let's go to Barcelona. The defending Spanish champions, Barcelona, who are in a very bad financial position. You don't have the same kind of salary cap in La Liga that you do in MLS, let alone in our other professional sports leagues. The amount you can spend is based on the amount you bring in. It is more of a sustainability cap than a salary cap. They're trying to make sure teams don't spend themselves broke. And that will come up in the next shenanigan we'll get to in a second. Barcelona are consistently up against that limit and bending every possible rule to try to get more room in their cap. And they're always talking about pulling financial levers. And that usually means selling off something for the future for cut rate to try to get more money in now to be able to spend more money now. It's going to come back to bite them at some point. It might be biting them right now. Their captain is their goalkeeper, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. He is the starting goalkeeper for Germany when he is healthy, looking ahead to a World Cup next summer. He's the starting goalkeeper for Barcelona when healthy. He's the captain. But now there's a big issue with Marc-Andre Ter Stegen and Barcelona. He had to have surgery this summer on his back. And he announced on his social media that he would be out for 3 months. He'd be back in 3 months. Seems innocuous. He announced it before the club did. Well, the club was really upset because there is a rule in the salary cap limit section for La Liga where if you have a player who is out for 4 months or more, you can use 50% of their salary to register a new player. And Barcelona have two goalkeepers that they need to register. Right now, they literally can't register them on their roster because they don't have room on the salary cap. So they were hoping that they would get Ter Stegen out for 4 months and be able to register one of these guys. Okay. They were very upset with his social media post, but that's not binding. That's just social media. People say crazy things on social media if you haven't noticed. So now to get the dispensation and be able to get a bigger salary cap number, they have to share Ter Stegen's confidential medical information with La Liga about how the surgery went and how long it'll be for him to come back and doctors signing off on it. Well, to be able to share that confidential medical information with La Liga, they need Ter Stegen's signature to do that. He said no. So this is not a good situation when your captain and your injured goalkeeper says, no, I'm not going to help you try to bend the rules in this case. No. So now Barcelona is looking at what they can do to sanction him as part of their disciplinary protocol. Can they fine him? Can they? I don't know. I don't know what else they can do. Here's the other element. He's the captain. They've talked about trying to strip the captaincy from him. Well, the manager, Hansi Flick, said, no, the captaincy at Barcelona is, as it always has been, will be decided by a vote from the players. The Barcelona players are fully behind Ter Stegen. They will vote him as captain no matter what. So you got a giant mess. That's just one of many messes at Barcelona. They don't even know where their first home game is going to be when they play it in about 5-6 weeks' time. They don't even know what stadium that's going to be in right now. We'll get to that aspect of Barcelona shenanigans maybe next week. Maybe we'll save that for the 3-4-3 next week. But yeah, it's a mess. I don't know if they're going to be able to get 5 different players registered that they need for this upcoming season. They got 5 guys that they need to register, and right now they can't. And Ter Stegen is saying, no, I'm not going to let you have my medical information to share with the league to possibly be able to register these guys. Welcome to Barcelona. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. We're talking shenanigans around the world. Let's go to Sheffield, England. Sheffield Wednesday, a longstanding team. I believe the 5th oldest team in England. Been around forever. John Harkes, U.S. men's national team legend, was there. That's how I first came across Sheffield Wednesday. They've been in the top flight. They've been in the Premier League. They haven't been in quite a while. They have fallen on hard times. And now the English Football League, the governing body for the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th divisions, they are in the 2nd division, the championship. The EFL is concerned that Sheffield Wednesday's opening match of the season on Sunday might not happen. The players at the club forced the cancellation of a friendly over the weekend because they haven't been paid on time. They haven't been paid on time since April. They weren't paid on time in March before that, and then they haven't been paid on time since April. You have 15 players signed to the first team right now, and only a handful over the age of 21. They're due to travel to Leicester City for the first game on Sunday. Players are like, why should I even go and risk injury right now? Because they can terminate contracts if wages aren't paid, and many players are considering that. They can't register new players because of their late payments. They haven't paid taxes. They've got all kinds of financial issues. So they are on a 3-window registration embargo. So they can only add their academy players, their young players, to play in these games. Staff are reportedly struggling to pay bills. They had no preseason games. They'd have no head coach. Players reportedly will have to pay for their own hotel rooms. This is for a 2nd division team in England. Yeah, if players want to stay after the game, they're going to have to pay for their own hotel room. The owner has refused to sell the club for double what he bought it for in 2013. Sheffield Wednesday is a gigantic mess. And the fact that the English Football League has allowed it to get to this point, it's like I said, they haven't been paid on time since April. This is not new news. The fact that it's gotten to this point, I know there's difficulty in forcing a club to be sold, and there's laws and things, and it's complicated. I understand that. But it is an absolute joke that right now you have a game scheduled for international broadcast, and it might not happen. It might not happen. It might happen with academy kids playing. Who knows? So that leads us to the master of shenanigans, John Textor, who is an American businessman who is the owner of Eagle Football Group, although not the operator of it right now because he's been pushed out of that. He is the chairman at Botafogo, who you might remember purchased Thiago Almada and has not paid for him as of yet. He was the chairman at Olympique Lyon in France, but he got pushed out of that, even though Eagle Football Group, the company that he owns, is owning Lyon. So follow me here. Botafogo, the club in Brazil where Thiago Almada was purchased from Atlanta United. He went to Botafogo first. Botafogo has sent a letter to Lyon, both owned by the same group. One is still chaired by John Textor, one was. They sent a letter to recover money, reportedly anywhere between 65 and 75 million euro. 4 different transfers that went from Botafogo to Lyon, and they were given discounted rates on those signings to try to help Lyon. Lyon paid nothing for Thiago Almada's loan there the second half of last season, the first half of 2025. All of that money was to help cover Lyon's debts. Botafogo has helped cover all that. So Botafogo has put out official releases now about all of this and saying they're demanding the money that was previously loaned by Botafogo to Lyon. Lyon almost got relegated because of their financial issues, but they were able to lobby their way back into the first division. And now what Botafogo is saying is that if this money does not come from Eagle Football Group or from Lyon, then they are going to go and get more money coming in, new capital, new investors. And one of those new investors could be Evangelos Marinakis, the owner of Nottingham Forest. That would allow them to repay this debt without having to get the money from Lyon. Well, Marinakis is a friend of John Texter's, and Marinakis is the one who sold Matt Turner to Lyon. And then when Lyon pushed John Texter out of being the chairman of the club, they said, we don't want U.S. men's national team goalkeeper Matt Turner, especially for $8 million. Get rid of him. And they couldn't cancel the transfer, so then they loaned him to the New England Revolution. So this is getting into a lot of different tentacles. On top of all this chaos, John Texter transferred all of Botafogo's assets to a company that he created in the Cayman Islands. This happened as part of a board of directors meeting in mid-July. Now, Eagle Football Group, which is owned by John Texter, but not run by John Texter anymore, they filed a lawsuit to try to block that transaction. The businessman is the owner, but he no longer runs it. So basically, his company is suing one of his subsidiaries that he is the chairman of because of things that he is doing. And now, on top of all of that, to connect the dots fully, there are rumors swirling about John Texter possibly trying to buy Sheffield Wednesday because they're broke. And John Texter is broke. Kind of. He's trying to find somebody with money to front him so he doesn't have to pay his debts exactly the same way that he should. It's really complicated. I don't know if Atlanta United is going to get paid for Thiago Almada anytime soon. Botafogo should be blocked from registering new players if that doesn't happen. I don't know how John Texter would possibly buy Sheffield Wednesday, but they're in such dire straits that anything is possible at this point. So that's your shenanigans update around the world. I'll try to keep you posted on those three storylines as we go. They'll make it into next week's 3-4-3, I'm pretty sure. And that's coming up next. It's three local stories. It's four headlines from around the world. Not always shenanigans, sometimes good things. And three things that do make me smile about this game that I love so much. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, and now it is time for the 3-4-3, brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile. Let's start on the local stuff, and two of these really make me smile. Number one, we talked about some of the signings Atlanta United has made. Cooper Sanchez is one of those that was announced today. He signed his pro deal with Atlanta United to last year, was scheduled to become a homegrown for next season. That has been accelerated, and he is now a homegrown signing on the MLS roster for the rest of the 2025 season. He'd already been called up four times on short-term call-ups. And Cooper's development in 2025 has been one of my favorite things about the season for Atlanta United. He joined the academy in 2018, was part of the U16 team a couple of years ago that won the MLS Next Cup at that age group. He's made 23 pro appearances for Atlanta United, too. This year, he has started 12 of his 14 games. He's got two assists. A player who has a lot to give, and I think he's just consistently getting better and better every single game that I see him play. Cooper Sanchez, part of the roster, would expect to see him tomorrow night. Number two on the local side, Nick Sesek. He is also part of the roster going forward. We've seen him in matches in Leagues Cup and in MLS, but now he is part of the MLS roster for the remainder of the 2025 season. Joined the twos this year in February. He's made 14 appearances on the year, playing as a fullback, playing as a wingback as well. He's been called up to the first team on multiple occasions. He's created 18 chances this season as well, playing from that fullback position. Made his first team debut against NYC back in June, played on Saturday against Pumas. He came up through the Philadelphia Union Youth Academy. We don't hold that against him. Played in college at Pitt and then transferred to Indiana. He won a Big Ten regular season title and tournament title in 2020. Led his team to two NCAA national championship appearances in 2020 and in 2022. Number three on the local side, Atlanta United 2. They lost Sunday night in Fort Lauderdale. It was a very frustrating week to go along with the frustrating week for the first team. All felt like it tied together. Players were pulled up for Leagues Cup. Players, you know, were not available to be sent down to the twos for these two games. It was a 3-0 loss on Wednesday in Foxborough against New England, followed by an extremely frustrating 2-1 loss in Fort Lauderdale on Sunday night. A mistake late in the match was the go-ahead goal for Miami after their goalkeeper had been sent off, and they had brought on a 16-year-old goalkeeper that Atlanta United really wasn't able to test enough. The twos are back in action on Friday night in Toronto. Four headlines from around the world, part of the 3-4-3. Number one, LAFC are signing Sun Heung-min from Tottenham Hotspur. He is at their Leagues Cup match right now, watching LAFC lead Tigres at halftime 1-0. They finalized the deal for a league record fee. He's set to be introduced in the coming days. Going to pay in the neighborhood of $26.5 million to Tottenham Hotspur. Outside of Lionel Messi, Son becomes the highest profile player in the league. Adds a huge talent to LAFC, for sure. His impact commercially should be big, too. This is a player who is an icon for South Korean supporters. Fans of the South Korean national team regularly flew to London to watch him play. Reporters moved to London to cover the team. Now he's going into an LA market that is home to the largest Korean population in the United States, and it is the largest Korean population outside of Korea. So this is a really big deal, and I think it's easy to say, oh, well, it's not on the same level as Messi. No, it's not, but it could be really close in a lot of different ways. The fee of $26.5 million surpasses the fee Atlanta United paid for Emmanuel Latelot this past winter. Summer window has been big in MLS. You've got Thomas Müller, the 35-year-old Germany and Bayern legend. He is set to join Vancouver. Rodrigo De Paul, he has signed in Miami. And now Son becomes the marquee player in Major League Soccer's biggest market on the West Coast. A big, big signing. He's watching his future teammates start the second half now as they lead Tigres. Number two, silly season, and it's kind of a logjam of forwards at the moment. So Alexander Isak has said he wants to leave Newcastle. Liverpool made an offer worth around £120 million, and Newcastle said no. And Liverpool said, well, we're not coming back to the table. One reason why Newcastle said no is they don't have a replacement. They are linked with a move for Benjamin Sesko. So is Manchester United. Both have had offers received by RB Leipzig, where Sesko plays right now. According to reports, both have had contractual terms with Sesko agreed to. So now it's down to which club Leipzig wants to sell to. If Newcastle gets Sesko, then they might sell Isak to Liverpool. Liverpool are also trying to sell Darwin Nunez, but that's not going to block them from getting a deal done for Isak because Liverpool is loaded with money. I don't ever want to hear Liverpool fans talk about how they've done so much with so little and they don't spend like the other clubs and yada, yada, yada. No, no, y'all spend. Maybe you're just a little bit smarter about it than some other clubs, but y'all spend when you want to spend. This could be a gigantic summer in terms of spending for Liverpool coming off of a league title. So that brings more money in. And going into a Champions League campaign that Liverpool is going to want to reclaim that trophy. So they would like to get Isak. Newcastle need to get a replacement first, as Tigres have tied the game up in Leagues Cup. So Newcastle need a replacement to sell Isak. They're trying to get Sesko. If they don't get Sesko, they could go get Nicholas Jackson from Chelsea. That's a possibility. Manchester United are considering that as well. If Manchester United don't get Sesko and they decide that Jackson's not the guy, they could go back to Aston Villa to try to get Ollie Watkins. So you have all these dominoes of strikers right now in the transfer market, and we will see which dominoes fall first. Number three on the headlines, the Women's Copa America finished up in Ecuador with one of the best finals you'll ever see. Finished 4-4 after extra time. Penalty shootout went 5-4, and Brazil came back to beat Colombia in this. Marta came off the bench and scored an absolute golazo to send it to extra time, then put Brazil into the lead in extra time, and then Colombia came back to tie it. Colombia with Linda Caicedo and Mayra Ramirez, wonderful play. They've never beaten Brazil. They still haven't, but they took Brazil to the absolute wire. The ninth title in the Copa America Feminina for Brazil. They have dominated the competition. However, the competition was great on the field. The quality of play was great. The final was as good as you could ever dream it would be. But the event was not well organized. And our friends at CONMEBOL, we watched this last summer with the Copa America in this country that CONMEBOL organized, not CONCACAF, not local cities, CONMEBOL. And that's why you had some of the issues that you had in multiple places. CONMEBOL did a very bad job with the Copa America Feminina. There were complaints about teams being forced to warm up in cramped indoor spaces and not being allowed to warm up on the field. There were complaints about the lack of video assistant referees in the early rounds. Tickets went on sale only 8 days before the opening match. Promotion of these games in Ecuador was non-existent. It's got to be better. And CONMEBOL, this is not purely a disrespect of the women's game situation, although that does factor in here when we're talking about CONMEBOL. They have to do a better job with the Women's Nations League kicking off in October. They have to. No way around it. They have to do a better job. But CONMEBOL in general has to do a better job, because they're not really doing a great job with organizing their men's tournaments either. You have some of the best players in the world. You have some of the iconic teams and national teams in the world on the men's and the women's side. The South American governing body has to invest in promotion and infrastructure and planning to match what you see in other parts of the world. They're not doing it. And this is, again, not purely in the women's game, but that needs more investment in terms of catching up than the men's game does. It's got to happen. CONMEBOL, the product is too good. They got to fix it. It's a joke. Number four on the headlines, Neymar. He is making a case to return to the Brazilian national team. Scored two goals in Santos's win last night over Juventude in the Brazilian top flight. Spoke to the media, said, I am available. Regardless of anything, I'm an athlete. I still feel good, so it's up to them. Talking about Carlo Ancelotti's staff. They were there to watch. Since October of 2023, he hasn't played for the Brazilian national team. He's played five straight games, something that he hasn't done since 2022. In 17 games so far this season, he has 6 goals and 3 assists. They've got 2 World Cup qualifiers coming up in September. Brazil's already qualified. If he doesn't get hurt between now and then, I would love to see Neymar back in the team just to see what he can do at that level. Neymar, one of the all-time greats, and I think at times we forget how good he was and maybe still could be. Would love to see him as part of the World Cup next summer. I don't know if he's going to get there. I don't know if his body's going to allow it to, but I would love to see him as part of it. Okay, three things that make me smile to wrap up this edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Number one, I've already touched on it a little bit, but the development that we have seen from Cooper Sanchez in 2025. Very easy to be down on anything Atlanta United related right now because the results have not been good, but results don't tell you everything about what a team is doing, what a overall club is doing. Cooper's development, and talking to so many different people about Cooper's development, everybody in different ways raving about him right now. It's been awesome to see. I've really enjoyed getting to know his game, getting to see him. He is absolutely one to watch for the future for Atlanta United. He is a potential MLS level starter. I think he's a potential national team level player. He's already been part of the youth national teams. He's that good, and he's got that much potential in my mind. Number two on things that make me smile, Georgia State University soccer media day yesterday for both the men's and the women's teams. That means the season is right around the corner. They've already started to play some preseason games. I really enjoy getting to call the Panthers games. If you have not gone to a game at the facility off of MLK, if you've been on the MARTA line, on the East-West line, you've seen it, you've gone by it, and you've probably looked at it and be like, wow, that looks like an amazing field. It is. Such a cool environment to see games at the cage. That's what they call it. these are two good teams with a lot of local talent, but also a lot of international talent on top of that. I'm looking forward to it. Gavin Williams, one of the best players in the state. On the guys' side, Aliyah Fadul should be a Canadian youth international, one of the best players in the state, in the Southeast. On the women's side, really looking forward to the Panthers getting on the field here very, very soon and calling those games. I can't wait. And number three on things that make me smile, seeing so many different jerseys in the bends on Sunday for the Premier League Summer Series. Of course, we saw a lot of Manchester United jerseys. Saw a lot of West Ham jerseys. Saw a few Bournemouth jerseys, not a ton. Saw a lot of Everton jerseys. But then, you know, saw Milan, saw Juve, saw a whole bunch of Atlanta United jerseys, especially on the kids. Really cool. Columbia, really cool to see all of the different jerseys on display. It was a party, and it was a celebration of soccer in our area. And like I said, for fans of those teams, it's different. For just your neutral, it was a fun day at the Benz and got to see some great goals, got to see some good stuff. Hopefully the summer series and more international matches come to the Benz very, very soon. Thanks for hanging out with me tonight. Atlanta Soccer Tonight will be back next Tuesday at 10 o'clock as we will recap Leagues Cup, but we'll also recap Atlanta United's trip to Montreal on Saturday night. Adios, everybody.